Good morning, everybody. It is a pleasure to be here. And I want to, before I begin, I'd like to just explain what I meant by the title. When we think of the concept of judging favorably, we usually think of ben adam chavero, interpersonal. This is about having better relationships, who are judgmental and critical, as we're going to see soon, often have a hard time with their relationships, and therefore it would seem that the purpose of this specific topic is to work on having healthier relationships. That is definitely true. In addition, we would like to say that there is a ben adam la'atzmo and a ben adam la'makom aspect of this concept. Meaning, I'm working on this because it's good for me in my relationships not to be critical. It's also good for my personal development not to be critical. And it's good for my relationship with Hashem for me not to be critical. Let's understand this and then we'll kind of delve into the topic. What about this? I think when we talk about ben adam l'chavero, it's obvious. And many different sources are going to point, as we're going to see, to the interpersonal aspect. The Maharshal, who I don't quote for you in the sources, basically says if we want to synopsize what this midah is about, it's about having a strong, united community. Because when people are very judgmental and critical of each other, there's a lot of divisiveness in the community, and we need to be strong and united. And that's really the purpose of this midah. When we look at what about this is between me and God, so I'd like to quote you two sources. Louder, you're not hearing me well. Okay, thank you. Okay, the Yismach Moshe says, and when I'm referring to something, I have many different sources and I didn't want to put them all on the sheet, so when I refer to ones on the sheet, I will tell you. The Yismach Moshe says that every time somebody does something wrong, there are two dimensions. One dimension is the fact that if I commit an avera, on a spiritual level, what I did was incorrect. But in every improper act, there's also a concept of a chilul Hashem, defamation of God's name. Therefore, he says very interestingly, when we judge people favorably, we at least are diminishing the chilul Hashem aspect, where people look at other Jews and say, look what she's doing. Ah. When I judge favorably, whether or not the person did something wrong, at least on the level of the defamation of God, that aspect is diminished. And that's about my relationship with Hashem. The Maharil Diskin, and this is just an introduction, we're about to go right into what I really wanted to say, but I wanted to just introduce the title. The Maharil Diskin says something very beautiful. Why do we have to judge favorably? Because we want to keep up high standards of behavior in our community. When you believe and you point out to yourself and to others everybody's wrongdoing, you're lowering the standard. When you look at people and you assume somebody like her, she must have meant well, or I must not understand what she's doing, we're going to look at that deeply soon, then we're saying that we believe that people can function on a high level, and we aspire for that level, and we raise the level of function. And that's another dimension. That's what I meant by judging favorably as a key to inter and intrapersonal growth. But we're going to get deeply into this. Let's start with the sources. Our first question, is this a mitzvah? Is it a midah? What is it? And where do we see this concept of judging favorably? So the very first source, Vayikra, Perek Yutet, Pasuk Tevav, B'tzedek Tishvok Amitecha. You should judge your people favorably. What's that, I'm sorry? Justly. Tzedek, honest, justly. The Moneh HaMitzvot, the different Sfarim, the Rambam and the Brachinah, different Sfarim that count the mitzvot. Count this as a mitzvot aseh. And there are three dimensions of this mitzvot aseh. One is for judges. And that's really the most basic understanding of the way we understand this pasuk. Judges have to judge favorably. We need them to be honest, We need them to be just, and we need them to do correct judgment. The two other dimensions of this mitzvah are, very easy, encouraging people who are worthy of being judges to take on the position. Sometimes we have people, and this is very understood, who really are cut out to be judges, but they're afraid of the position. They're afraid of the responsibility. They're afraid of the tension. And the Torah is telling you, "V'tzedek tishpot amitecha." Become a judge if you're capable, because the community needs you. The third dimension of this mitzvah is what we're going to talk about today. V'tzedek tishpot amitecha. Every one of us is a judge in the courtroom of our own minds. And the Torah is telling you, if the judges sitting in court have to be just and honest, you in your own mind have to be honest. And that's the tzedek tishpot amitecha. So we're going to see that two places Chazal relate to this, in the Gemara in Shavuot, Daf Lamed, the source number 2, and the Mishnah Avot, Perek Aleph. The Gemara in Shavuot says, "Habedan et chavercha lekaf zchut." This is the first time we see what does it mean to judge justly, as you just said. We're going to see that the Gemara says it means judging people favorably. Meaning, if you have the ability to interpret a certain action that you've seen, and you can either say, oh, this must have been with bad intentions or an incorrect action, or you could see it favorably, you should choose to see it favorably. Now, there are many, many halachic nuances here of who we have to judge favorably and who we don't have to judge favorably. I chose not to go into them because I could spend a whole hour just on that. But I'll give you an overview. A tzaddik, somebody who's known to have upstanding standards in the community, we have a chiyuv, we have a halachic obligation to judge them properly. A rasha, somebody who's known, and again, the definitions are very argued by the Rishonim, what's a rasha, what's a tzaddik, but I'm just giving you an overview. A rasha, you are not supposed to judge him favorably. There's a machloket between two different Rishonim about whether it's asur to judge him favorably or whether it's just better not to. But if you see somebody as a rasha bringing flowers to somebody, you don't say, oh, that's so wonderful. You say, I wonder, he might be trying to manipulate somebody. That's not where I'm going to learn my good actions from. The middle category, which is most common, people who we just don't even know. We don't know them. We don't know if they're tzaddikim or rishayim. And here, some of the farshim say that it's a mitzvah to judge favorably. But the majority say that it is a good midah. It's a good characteristic. You're not chayav, but it's a good characteristic to teach yourself when you see people to judge them in a good light. Now, I think part of the problem we have with this concept is that many of us have a kindergarten level of understanding judging favorably. I know when I was young, I was told, you see somebody walking into McDonald's, munching on a cheeseburger, you're supposed to assume that maybe your glasses need to be cleaned, or maybe they took their kosher sandwich, or whatever it is. Unfortunately, as with many things, we stay on an elementary school level. And we don't really understand what does this mean for a sophisticated person to start thinking about everything in life, but I just better clean my glasses. That's a good 3-year-old interpretation, not for us. So what does this mean for a sophisticated person? And I have to tell you, when I say for a sophisticated person, there's a famous tzaddik in Yerushalayim by the name of Tzvi Meir Goldberg. He teaches a lot about Yisrael, and he has a whole book just on the topic of judging favorably. It's called Diyun Lekaf Zchut. He says there, a little bit tongue-in-cheek, that you know how people view this concept? There's 613 mitzvot in the Torah. Some of them are for men, some of them are for women, some of them are for kohanim. And Baruch Hashem, there's one mitzvah for the naive people, judging favorably. Even naive people need their own mitzvah. He says it's not true. He says to be able to judge favorably is actually a sign of cognitive sophistication and cognitive flexibility. Because I just saw something, I have my immediate interpretation of what I think happened, and most people stick with their immediate judgments. The ability to think flexibly and to reevaluate is something which requires a certain amount of sophistication, and therefore it's not a simple mitzvah. It's actually a very developed mitzvah. The Chafetz Chaim gives us a higher level of interpretation of what we're supposed to be doing here. And I say to my students, this is not about playing games, about cleaning your glasses. There are five stages that you're supposed to move from one to the next until you find one that resonates by you. Because it has to resonate, it's not a game. So what are the five stages? First of all, what the Chafetz Chaim calls etzem ha'inyan. Maybe the thing that you thought he did, didn't do. And that's the very first stage. But you know what? Sometimes we know, and we know that the person did do the thing. So what's the next possible stage? Shkaga. Maybe they did it by mistake. Number two. Sometimes number two doesn't resonate. Why? The person's a very knowledgeable person. They know what's allowed and what's not allowed. And that one's just not resonating by me either. Number three. Chumrat ha'isur. Meaning, they did it, they knew it was wrong, but they don't understand how wrong it is. Many of us, chumrat ha'isur, how chamor, how ha'isur, the thing that's asur. And you know what? Sometimes, if you know somebody well, you don't, that one doesn't resonate by you either. Because this person knows what they're doing, and they know that it's pretty serious, the thing that they did. Number four. Number four, I have to stop for a second, because this is the one that I think is most difficult, and maybe even the biggest challenge. The Chafetz Chaim says maybe you're missing a detail. Meaning, they knew what they were doing, they knew that it was wrong, they knew how wrong it was, but you're missing something in this story. Now, this is hard for us, because most of us, if we experience something with our own eyes and our own ears, it's hard for us to imagine that we're missing a little detail. So I must just stop for a second and tell you a personal story, because I think true stories are better even than the made-up ones. Many years ago, I have a son who is now almost 22. When he was around 4 years old, he had a friend who lived four or five houses down from us, who came to visit us on a Friday night after candlelight. This is in a suburb of Yerushalayim. And I light candles. And after candlelighting, I give a little treat to the children. So this boy was very happy to have a piece of licorice. He quickly finished it, and he asked me for another piece of licorice. I gave him the second piece, and then he came back and asked me for a third. At that point, I started thinking that maybe his mother doesn't want him to fill up on licorice before the Shabbos meal. So I said to him, "You know what, honey? Next week, I'll give out more. Come back next week after candlelighting." And he looks me in the face, all of 4 years old, and he says, "But I won't be able to come back next week because I'm going to be living in Australia by then." And I'm thinking, that's so interesting. His family was five houses down from me. I didn't know that they're living in Australia, they're moving to Australia. And something about this was getting me a little nervous that this child was having a very easy time just looking me in the face and telling me something like that. So I said to him, "Okay, well, if next week doesn't work for you, let's call it, then go ask your mommy. It's a block with attached houses right nearby." I said, "Go ask your mommy. If she lets you have another piece, then I'll give you one." Looks me again straight in the face and says to me, "I can't. My mom is dead." And I'm already thinking, oh my gosh, you know, my son is friends with the pathological liar. You know, one of the ways we define pathology and lying is that anything which can be checked out very quickly, and the person's lying, and you know the person's alive because they're your neighbor. I said, this is very, I don't know if a four-year-old can be defined as a pathological liar. I'm already kind of analyzing this through my psychological, Anyway, the next day I get a knock on my door, inviting me to a goodbye party for this family. The husband quickly got a job in Australia, and they're very quickly packing up and leaving. So I knew that the first part of the story was true. But I also knew that the second part of the story was not true, because it was Robin's goodbye party. She was alive. Baruch Hashem. I go to the goodbye party, and I'm talking to Robin, and I said to her, How are you managing this? You have four little children, and your husband, and you're moving next week. And she's South African. She says to me, Dina, I'm not coping. I'm just dead. Unfortunate choice of words. But what this boy was trying to tell me, this little boy, is I can't bother my mother right now. She's having a hard time. Not only was he not a liar, but he was trying to be sensitive to his mother's needs. And I realized that this is what the Chafetz Chaim is telling us. Even when you think, how could I be missing a detail? You could be missing a detail. And it was good for me to understand, because I kind of am one of these people who does judge strongly, has my opinions. I'm already thinking about how I'm going to communicate to this mother that the child is a big liar. Wasn't the case. So that's what the Chafetz Chaim means when he says, be creative, because you might be missing a detail. But let's say, for whatever reason, even that is not resonating by you. The last level, the five, is a quote from Chazal. Al tadun et chavercha, al shetagia limkomo. Don't judge your friends unless you're in his shoes. That is a message in what we call differentiation. I, with my background and my constellation of personality traits, would never do such a thing. And if I would do, it would be considered pretty bad. But I don't have your challenges, I don't have your education, I don't have your life circumstances. So I'm not judging you because you're not me. The reason why I like to present this idea from the Chafetz Chaim is because I think that that last level should resonate by everybody. Even if you're very close to somebody, they're still not you. And that's part of judging favorably. Let's go a little further with the sources. And I want to tell you like this. When I think of this concept of judging favorably and of being critical, it's negative side, I think that for many of us, I like to focus a little bit on practical. So the first thing we have to do is think of who am I critical of? And what am I critical of? So my first sources, we have number 5 and number 6 on the source sheet, are based on the Mishnah and Avot that says, Asela Harav, the Mishnah and Avot is source number 3. The Pirushim that I'm going to look at are 5 and 6. Yoshua ben Perchia ben Omer, Asela Harav, Knelacha Chaver, Veveidan et Kol Ha'adam Lakaf Sfot, that's source number 3. The Mishnah is saying to you, take for yourself a rav, buy for yourself a friend, and judge all people favorably. What some of the Mefarshim and the Mishnah do is they try to understand the context. We're being told to judge favorably in the same Mishnah that talks about choosing a rabbi and a friend. So what's the Mishnah trying to tell me from the context? And it's fascinating. Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch says something very, very important. Look at number 5. Rav v'chaver, heim atarim haramim biyoter, shenachtir behem anashim yikirim lanu. He writes very beautifully. These are the highest and loftiest titles that you could give to people who are dear to you. Your Rav and your friends. And when he says Rav, I think we're also talking about our role models, our leaders. V'omnam, b'derach klal, Yichidim heim ha'anashim, ha'nelvim elinu b'delkei achim. But there aren't that many people who fit into this category to be our Rav and our friend. Shebedin yisku bo tamatarim, who are worthy of that title. Ach lamrot sherak ma'atim heim, harei mikol makom, haveidan et kol ha'adam lakaf zvot. Nishamer me'od, shelo lechrotz din kasher al mi shelo yeh. He's saying something very important. He says your inner circle are very, very precious people who you've chosen carefully. But there are many, 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 many who didn't make the grade. And what about them? Judge them favorably. He's talking here about an important process, meaning it's tricky for a person. On one level, you allow them to be discerning as to who you choose for your inner circle. You don't marry just anybody. You don't choose just anybody as a Rav. You don't just choose anybody as a good friend. And you might think that because you are allowed to be discerning about who is in your inner circle, that it therefore allows you to be critical of the people who didn't make it to the inner circle. I mean, you had a process. They were actively weeded out on some level. He says, no. He says, even though these people are not in your inner circle, you have a responsibility to look at them favorably. And here, when I look at it psychologically, I think that many of us are comfortable with the people who we're comfortable with, and then we're not comfortable with the people who are not in our circle. And this is the kind of person who, my inner circle can do no wrong. My child is a perfect bubala. But if somebody who I meet in the park, who I'm looking at and I don't know who they are really, and I'm saying, oh boy, look at them. Look at the way, what kind of chinuch are they giving their children? Look at how they're acting. Rosh Hashanah is telling us that this is a big danger. Because just because somebody's not in your circle does not mean that you're allowed to look at them critically. Yes? I'm sorry? What do you mean? Oh, yes. Yes. Very, very good point. I'll say so that everybody could hear you. This woman is saying very insightfully that bullying is based a lot on this principle. If you're in my inner circle, you're safe. But the kid who looks a little different, different culture, doesn't fit in with the crowd, they're a very safe victim, actually, for people. And this is very, very true. I think that when I look at it psychologically, and this is also related to the bullying, there's a concept in psychology called xenophobia, with an X. And xenophobia means fear of strangers. And in its most extreme form, it's literally a phobia. You see somebody from a different culture than you, and you are terrified that they're going to, who knows what they're going to do to you. But in its more subtle forms, we see it. People who just cannot see good in people who are not their type. And unfortunately, we have this problem in our community. It's not easy for us sometimes to look favorably on people who are not our type. And this is a big, this is what Rosh Hashanah Rosh is talking about. He's saying this is where you have to judge favorably. So that's one side of the coin. The other side of the coin is the opposite. And I think this is also fascinating. Look at source number 6, the Be'er Avot. Hine teva hatznaim halalu gorem liyot kin'a u'bikoret mitoreret mitzad ha'adam el harav v'chaver. Fascinating. He's saying exactly the opposite. Let me translate. The nature of the circumstances are that we sometimes have jealousy and criticism towards our rabbi and our friends. He's saying exactly the opposite of Rosh Hashanah Hirsch. He's saying you pick your inner circle, and then you take out your magnifying glass and you start being critical of your inner circle. This is my rav, and that's what he does. My friend, and you're doing this. The opposite psychological phenomenon. It's people who, the other kid is fine. It's my kid who's just not good enough. And he's saying it's kind of sometimes for some people a natural circumstance, a natural consequence of having an inner circle that we're critical of the people who we love. I would like to say if the extreme of the other side is xenophobia, I think that what motivates us here in this situation is perfectionism. And what happens is that I have high standards, and you are an extension of me because you're in my inner circle. So when I see you doing something wrong, I am going to be hyper aware and hypercritical, because how dare you be my husband, my child, my friend, and act like that? And perfectionism is a nice Jewish woman's mitzvah. And we often do, you know, the people who are lucky enough to be in our circle are also lucky enough to be criticized by us. And sometimes this is true. Yes? Okay. So we have to say that also. The question was, where does Hochach Tochach et Amitecha fit in? Which is the Pasuk in Vayikra, also the same parak as this, which says that you should surely rebuke your friend. Hochach Tochach et Amitecha is another topic that I'd like to deal with. I don't have so much time today, but I'll give you a quick idea. about this. We all know that this is a mitzvah, and the famous Rambam that we know about this, which said if you're going to criticize the person and they're not going to take it well, better not to criticize them. Lo tisat lav chet. You shouldn't have to bear his sin, because he will be offensive, because he might do it on purpose instead of doing it by mistake. But I want to share with you a beautiful idea from the Kli Yakar. The Kli Yakar says about the pasuk that you mentioned, that at times when Jews had Avat Yisrael properly, they were able to be Mekayim Nismitza, they were able to rebuke each other, because everybody knew that it was coming from love. Unfortunately, at times when there's not enough Avat Yisrael between us, we're very defensive, because we don't think that people are coming from the best place. And if you think about it, if you're sitting eating lunch with your best friend, and you're about to swallow a piece of lettuce that had a worm on it, and your friend says, don't eat that, you'd be thankful. Thank you. You know she cares about you. And you know she's not being critical, she's just telling you. We're not secure because often we think that people are condescending, we think that people are looking for excuses to tell us off, and it's not an easy mitzvah. If this was my topic, and maybe someday we'll deal with this topic more in length, there's a tremendous amount on how to do rebuke properly and when to do it properly. But you're right. And sometimes, in certain circumstances, that's what's supposed to happen. But judging favorably is more what's going on in my head. And if I'm living with somebody who I love, and they're always living under my critical evaluation, this is what the source is telling you. These people deserve to be judged favorably as well. I want to give a share on this topic, and a woman in the crowd gives a big sigh after I gave these two sources, and I said to her, what's wrong? And she says, I'm both critical of my inner circle, critical of my outer circle. Also happens. The reason why I brought you these sources is because when I teach a topic, I like us to go home and think about it a little bit on a personal level. So my purpose here was to have us evaluate a little bit, who are we critical of? Are we more likely to be critical of those who we love, who are close to us, or critical of strangers? And where does this mitzvah apply to us? But now, I would like to go to a completely other way of viewing this. If you notice, these sources in the Mishnah, the focus is a person. The assumption being, I'm in a little bit of a complicated situation vis-a-vis this person, and whatever they do, hopefully not everything, but I'm critical of what they do. And the focus is the person. Either they're in my inner circle, they're in my outer circle, more than one person, many people. There's another way to view this concept. If we look at sources number 8 and 9, based on the Gemara and Kiddushin, Daf Ayin, the Gemara is talking about what if your criticism is around a topic, not around the person. There's something particular that I'm very sensitive about. And when I see people messing up in that area, I get very critical. It's a whole other way to view this concept. It's not around the person, it's around the topic. Here, fascinatingly, the Gemara gives us two ways to look at this. Source number 8. Kol ha-pusel b'mumo pusel. Which means literally, anybody who discredits another person, it's a topic that he himself is weak in. Mum, his moment, his blemish. Then the Gemara goes on to say something much more general. Kol ha-pusel pasul. Anybody who postles or negates other people is himself blemished. What's the difference between these two sources? The second one, it's kind of like an umbrella. It's saying to you, if you are critical of other people, you have to ask yourself, what's not resolved about me? Meaning not even looking at the specifics, but just in general, why am I noticing so much what other people are doing wrong? What is this doing for me? Why am I doing this? The first one, number 8, is much more specific. It's saying to you, look at the thing that you're being critical of and ask yourself, is this possibly a weak point of mine? And you know how the English expression goes, it takes one to know one? Sometimes the thing that we're very critical of is because we notice it in ourselves. We don't like to admit that we have it in ourselves. So we externalize it and notice it in other people because we're very familiar with it. And we can't, these are the selfish people who talk about how everybody's selfish. You know, the egocentric people who can't stand other people's gaiva. Projection, exactly. I project it onto you, and I can hate it in you because that's safer than hating it in myself. Exactly. Now here it's fascinating, because the problem with this aspect, and I thought about this, the problem is that usually we're critical about things that we care about a lot. So it's almost like it comes with the territory of growth and development, that, you know, you learn something new, and you attach to it, and you identify with it, and then you can't help but noticing all the people who aren't doing that. Now, I once went to some kind of nutrition course and started focusing on feeding my children healthier food. And then it started to bother me so much when I started seeing people feeding their children, you know, food coloring and sugar, and because that kind of comes with the territory of noticing, working on something, is that you start noticing all the people who aren't. I say this to my students in Israel for the year. You learn a new halacha, and you're very excited about it. Make sure that when you come home, it's not that I grew in Ben Adam L'Malko, meaning I'm keeping this halacha, but I went down in Ben Adam L'Chaver, and now I'm critical of anybody who's not keeping that halacha. I tell them it's a very dangerous process. Really, our goal is that we're supposed to be growing our Ben Adam L'Chaver, and our Ben Adam L'Malko are supposed to be growing together. And if learning a new halacha is making you critical of other people, then I kind of say that sometimes you're not ready to go home yet. You have to learn how you can work on yourself and not be critical of people who are not doing what you're doing. Very, very, very essential. So let's look at this a little deeper. How do we understand what's going on here? And here, I'm going to refer to Rutzvi Meyer Zilberberg, who I mentioned before. And in his book, Diyun L'Kaf Zchot, he talks about this. And he talks about the fact that when you see somebody do something that really bothers you, and that negative energy that you feel towards this person and you take home is critical, no. How does Ava Yisrael help us change that? So, first of all, based on the Gemara, Kol HaPosel B'Momo HaPosel, really this person is like a magic flashlight that could be projected back onto me to ask myself, how am I doing in this area? So, and here I'd like to quote from source number 10. The Gemara in Nazir, Kol ha-ro'eh sotah b'kil kula, yazir ha-tzmo min ha-yayin. It's a famous Michut Parshiyot that we have in the Torah. We have the story of the sota, the woman who acts immorally. And right after that, we have the story of the Nazir, who decides to abstain from wine. And Chazal and the Gemara ask, why did the Torah have these parashiyot next to each other? The woman who commits adultery, and then the man, the Nazir, who stops drinking wine. And the idea is the famous idea, kol ha-ro'eh sotah b'kula, anybody who sees the adulterous woman, will then decide not to drink wine. The Baal Shem Tov talks about this, and he says very beautifully, what's going on here? He says, the Nazir could have looked at what this woman had done, and he could have very self-righteously said, oh, what's the world coming to today? Look how people are acting. And he could walk away, feel very holy, very pure, and do nothing other than criticize somebody else. Baal Shem Tov says, Kol ha-ro'eh sotah b'kil kula yazir ha-tzmo min ha-yayin. It means every time I see something improper that I think somebody else is doing, it's a chance for me to reflect on myself and ask myself, would I ever get to this behavior? Now, the answer doesn't always have to be yes. It could be no. This is a very strong point in me. It wouldn't happen to me. But all the energy that's directed towards being critical of somebody else is then directed back towards my self-development and self-awareness. This is so important, because you feel very holy when you go like this to other people. But you're not any holier because you didn't grow from it. When you ask yourself that self-evaluating question of, would I ever find myself here, you take away that critical bent and you try to learn something about yourself. I live in Yerushalayim, and I was driving through Shar Yaffa once, going to the Old City. And anybody who's familiar with the scene, there are a lot of young and not so young Arab people sitting on the gates near Shar Yaffa. And sometimes they get into fights with each other, they throw things at each other. I happened to pass by there once when there was a fight going on. My children look at the window and they say, look at these people, you know, and they, you know, start criticizing. Look what they're doing. And I said to them, I said to my children, would you ever sit on Shar Yaffa on the gate and fight with your brother? So they said, no. I said, but would you do that in the privacy of our house with the door closed upstairs in the bedroom? Yes. I said, okay, so now you learn something. You learned what it looks like when people fight. And maybe you do it in a different context, in a different way, but that's something that we learn. What it looks like to watch people fighting, and then where do we fight? Would I have a fight in the street in public? Maybe not. Would I have one in my house? Maybe yes. That's called reflecting the energy back towards myself and trying to grow from it. Tzvi Maria Zilberberg says that when you see a chisaro, a weakness in somebody else, you have to ask yourself, is there any way, is there any context where I am ever doing the thing that I see in other people? It's not about criticizing yourself. It's about evaluating yourself. You can say, thank God, I'm very strong in this area, not for me. But then you also learn something. And this kind of diffuses some of that negative energy, which is so focused on the other person, what they're doing wrong, and teaching yourself something, learning a lesson for yourself. He goes even further, so beautifully. And he said, I love this idea. He says, what happens when you see somebody with their weakness exposed by something they did or something they said or the way they're behaving? And you're upset at them, you're critical, you're angry at them for doing that thing. He says, unbelievably, I'm going to bring it down to a woman's level because it's not exactly the way he says it. He says, when somebody's weakness is exposed to you, they often don't even realize that it is. Most of us work pretty hard to cover our blemishes. And we don't want people to know our weak points. And here, this person was exposed. I picked up something about them that they probably would rather that I not realize about them. It's equivalent when you're walking down the street and there's some woman, maybe very well dressed, walking with a lot of confidence, except she doesn't realize that her slip is halfway down the floor, on the floor, or she has some button or zipper opened in some place that's embarrassing. That's what it's like when people are exposed. Most people don't realize that they're being exposed, and if they had a choice, they wouldn't want to be. Or if they realized what they were doing, that was wrong. He says, what happened? You know, there are some people who walk over to the lady and tap her on the shoulder and, you know, gently point it out to her. But assuming that you wouldn't do that, what do you usually do? You turn away. You're almost sorry that you saw it. You feel bad for that you saw it. What's the next thing we do? Check our own slip to make sure it's not. It's almost a natural, you know, response. Tzvi Maier says, and he doesn't bring the example of a woman in the slip, but this is a woman's group, so. He says, when you see somebody's weakness, look away. It's embarrassing. And then when you look at yourself, you say, what would I feel like if I was exposed? If something about me that I didn't want people to know was becoming more obvious. So it's almost like, instead of being angry, it's like, I'm so sorry that I saw that. And hope it wasn't happened to me. Sorry that I saw it in you. It's such a much more gentle, loving way of viewing people's chesronos. But he goes even further. Where is this negativity and the anger coming from when we're so critical of other people? So, kol hapostel b'momo postel sometimes means that it's my weakness as well. But not always. Sometimes it could be something that I've worked on a lot for myself. And that's why I'm so upset. Because you know what? Get it together. Get your act together. You could be better. That's what we're thinking sometimes. So he says such a beautiful idea. He says the fact that you're doing well in a certain area is a balance between hishtadlut, the fact that you've put effort into improving yourself, and siyata d'shmaya. You clearly are inspired in this way, or your nature goes in sync with it, or you were motivated at some point in your life to work on yourself. He says, the part of you that's upset at the other person is that you don't think that you're trying enough. I worked on that for a long time to get to be who I was. Why can't they be like that? He says, even though you feel that you've put in a lot of effort, you'll never ever know the balance between your effort and how much of it is siyata d'shmaya. And I love this idea. I worked on a topic very, very hard. That's true. That's that much. But maybe the siyata d'shmaya was this much. The fact that somewhere in my life, somebody inspired me, I heard a share on a certain topic, my education led me in that direction, my kohot, my inner abilities led me that way. Many, many things in life lead people down certain paths where they come to certain levels of success. Clearly the person who you're looking at does not have as much siyata d'shmaya as you in this area. So why are you angry? If you'd win a lottery, would you be angry with people who didn't win the lottery, so we're struggling financially? He says, that's what it's like when you're successful in a certain area and somebody isn't. You won the lottery. Be thankful. And pray for them that they should have more success. It switches the energy from things that divide us and make us critical of each other to being loving and caring. So important. I'm sorry I saw this in you, and I hope things will be better for you. It's a whole different way of perceiving people's weaknesses. We don't have so much time, we have to wind down already. I said that there was an intrapersonal aspect of this mita as well. How does that work? So let's go back to source number 7. Rav Yudaya Panini lived in the time of the Rambam in Provence. Not a very well-known perush. He wrote a perush on Pirkei Avot. And on the same mission that we've been dealing with, Asav HaRav, Melech HaChaver, Bebeidana Kol Adam L'Kav Sot. Haruzal L'Adam L'Adun Et Chavero L'Zchut Afilu B'ma Sh'Nir'a Lo L'Mareh Einav Shehu Ra. He says, Chazal taught us to judge people favorably, even when it doesn't look so good. Even if you have to kind of stretch a little bit to judge the person's favor, you should. Why? Hu yikne az mida chashuva lenafsho, because he will acquire a very important mida in his nefesh. Ve'achik min hara u'min achiyu. He will distance himself from the bad and the ugly. I'd like to explain, I think there's a lot of depth in what he's saying, and it's fascinating. When you judge people favorably, what are you doing? It's often an ambiguous situation where I could interpret this in a good way, I could interpret it in a bad way, so the good and bad are mixed together and it's ambiguous. What am I doing when I judge favorably? I'm bringing the good option close to me, and I'm pushing the bad option away. He says that when you judge people favorably, you're teaching yourself to extract good and push away bad. And this is a mita in the nefesh, to look for good and to push away bad. It's a mita which will then affect you in your own personal life decisions. Sometimes we have to make a decision about something and we're ambivalent. We're not sure if the right thing to do is or not. He says so beautifully, if you've worked on being dama kafsot, you know how to smell good over bad. You will more naturally choose good options, push away the bad. You'll have a good sense about how to choose good over bad. I thought that was fascinating, because it ends up affecting you as a person, even when it has nothing to do with other people. I'm not sure what the right thing to do is here right now. Now I know. He said that people get used to choosing good over bad, and they'll be able to use this in other areas of life as well. I once taught this idea, and I had a student in my group who was a recent Chozer Teshuva, and she was learning Hilchot Shabbos in her program where she was learning. She said the rabbi was teaching them about the Lachot of Borer, extracting, you know, what we're allowed to separate on Shabbos, what we're not allowed to separate. And the rabbi said, you know, one of the three conditions of what you're supposed to do in Torah is you're supposed to choose good over bad. In other words, you can choose out the food and leave behind the bones, right? So he's talking about it in a purely helpful Shabbos context. He says, choose good over bad. And then he, like, smiled and he said, and do this in all other areas of life as well. I thought it was such a nice twist on the halacha. It's good to extract good from bad. It's good for us. So that's basically what Rabbi Zaya is saying here right now. He's saying you will, on a personal level, grow from learning how to extract good from bad. Okay, I really would like to wind down and leave some room for questions. So I'll just give you source number 11. The Gemara Masechet Shabbos says, "Hachoshev b'kshirim lokeh begufo," which literally means if you suspect honest people, you will suffer, you'll be hit on your body. Now, halachically, it's not true. There's a concept of malchut, which existed at the time of the Beit Hamikdash, at the time of the Sanhedrin, where people would sometimes get punished with whiplashes. But it's not about judging unfavorably. So what does it mean, lokeh begufo? You will be hit on your body. So the Maharal, source number 12, listen to this, second line, I'm sorry, the end of the first line, begin the second. Pirush, ki ha-choshed b'kshirim, ra'oi l'lakot b'gufo. Mashal l'mishu zorek eben b'kotel, im ha-kotel shel avanim, ve'ein mekabel et ha-eben, harei oto eben chozer elav, kivan she'ein ha-kotel mekabel et ha-eben. He says, lokeh b'gufo is figurative, not literal. Meaning, if you throw something at a solid surface, and it doesn't receive the thing that you threw, it could boomerang back against you and you can get hurt. When you suspect an honest person, you are throwing an accusation at them, but they're not deserving of that accusation. So it boomerangs back to you and you're the one that gets hurt. He says, that's what it means. If you suspect honest people, it boomerangs back against you. How do I understand that? When we live in a circle of suspicion, are suspicious of each other. They don't trust each other's intentions. Eventually, you get ensnared in the trap that you created. Because if people are suspicious of each other, they're going to suspect you too. So, the Maharal is telling you advice for life. He's saying, you have trusting societies, people will trust you. You have suspicious societies, people will be suspicious of you as well. And that's what I'm pushing the shimlo people for. I'll just end with one beautiful idea and then I'll take questions. I love this idea. Rav Tzvi Meyer says about this concept. What are we doing? We're supposed to judge a whole person. And when we're critical, we're often hyper-focusing on one aspect of that person's personality. And we're not seeing the whole person. He says, you know what it's like? It's like going to a museum and seeing a world-famous picture in the Met or the Louvre or wherever you are. And what do people do when they see a world famous picture? They stand back and they take in the whole picture. Let's say you were in a world famous museum. You were looking at the Mona Lisa. I don't know what you were looking at. And there was some tourist, everybody standing back and taking in the whole picture. And some tourist picks up a magnifying glass and goes over to the picture, close up, starts focusing on a little dot in the corner of the Mona Lisa. What would you say? This person just does not know how to appreciate art. You're supposed to stand back and take it all in. But Zvi Meyer, who himself is overflowing with Avas Yisrael, says every Jew is a work of art. You have to know how to appreciate art. Stand back, look at the whole person. When you hyper-focus, you're taking this magnifying glass at the corner of the Mona Lisa, you don't know how to appreciate art. He said, we have to learn that every Jew is a work of art, and we have to take in the entire person and understand that. Thank you very much, everybody. If anybody has any question, I'm happy to take any question. Yes. What's that? Very good. For first of all, I just want to make an announcement. For people who are interested, I have a teleconferencing in personal development topics. If anybody's interested, I have a card with information. I'm happy to give it to you. I think it's a very important question. The question was, the former generations looked up to their elders and weren't so critical of them. And this generation is much more assuming that we know better than our parents and our grandparents. I think that is a concept. Chazal say, which means that every generation moves down in terms of its abilities. We teach people, when you read a Rashi and you don't understand Rashi, you don't say Rashi didn't know what he was talking about, I know better. Because you know, in Rishonim Kimalachim, Anu Kimne Adam. And I think the assumption that we have that the older generations don't know what they're talking about is something which really has to be, and I'll tell you something else. I tell people, even if you've got a better education than the other generations, because I think that's sometimes the source of the problem, is that the younger generation is more educated. I say to them, your parents have an akuda of gadlut, of something great that they are supposed to be your teacher. And you better figure out what it is that where you are completely the Talmud here, and you have to think about that, and you have to also imagine that. You know, when you're talking to somebody, even if you know much more than them, but what life experience or what areas are their excellence where I should just like bow down and learn from them? That's very, and I'll just end with this based on what you said. I heard this today from Reverend Sephora Heller. She said that every time you meet a Jew, whether it's somebody you know or you don't know, you ask yourself two questions. I love this. I think it's a life mission. You ask yourself, how can I help and what can I learn? How can I help? Because we as Jews, we want to help each other. But sometimes that could be a little bit diminishing for the other person. I'm here to help you. What can I learn? Reinstates the kavod. You have something to teach me. And I think if this is our attitude towards every person we meet, then we don't run into problems with being critical. How can I help and what can I learn? Thank you very much, everybody. I have cards up here if anybody's interested.